Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. Welcome to Task Master Talks with Kevin Sullivan, Amy Hoost, JP, John Paz. With me, of course, the star of the show, the former ECW and WCW World Tag Team Champion, the man behind the 83 weeks of dominance of WCW, the man behind the NWO, the Taskmaster, the Games Master, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Excellent. Thank you, my man.
So got the chance to see you on Dark Side of the Ring again for the Grams breaking the cycle. Pretty good to see you on there. Obviously, I mean, what a sad story. What a crazy story. I didn't know about the father and the uncle either. I mean, that's just nuts.
Yeah, and the Eddie's father. You're aware it was Mike's father, his grandfather, yep. His son, and his uncle.
Yes, crazy.
It's insane.
What was going on, like, you think, with the family? Like, what is that, a gene? Is that something, like, did they see that, you know, their relative did it, so they think it's okay? Like, where did that come from? Like, all that suicide's crazy.
I'm not a doctor, but I have heard they believe there's a recessive gene about suicide.
Wow.
You know, that if it's, it can follow from child to child, I guess. And it seems, you know, it's like they're not sure about recessive genes 100%, but, you know, that goes to show you something really strange there. Do you know what I mean?
Real. I mean, it's crazy. Five members of the family. I mean, that's just nuts.
Yep.
And what a sad story with the Grams, because, I mean, as they're going through it, it's like, wow, Florida, one of the greatest territories of all time. You know, at one point they had so much success, obviously really much more so pre-Vince and his national takeover. But man, Florida was, you know, the place to be for a lot of guys.
Yeah. I mean, everybody wanted to be there, especially in the winter. I mean, even though some of the trips were long, you could be home every night almost as you wanted to be. I mean, the weather was super, you know what I mean? It was always good business.
Now, you talked about like a dark side of Eddie, just as far as like, you know, there's always the stories of Bob Roode beating people up that are getting into the business, different guys beating people up. But Eddie was kind of the spearhead of that. He was the one that was behind some of the, you know, like, let's say football player comes to town, I'm going to kick these guys' ass, and the wrestler gets in the ring with them and beats the shit out of the football player. So that's Eddie spearheading that?
Yeah.
What would he say?
I mean, people would try to be wrestlers. They'd come down. And not only would they get stretched, you know, wrestling-wise, you know, then he would beat them up himself. You know, I mean, it was really primitive. You got to realize, we put our mores on what's happening now than what was happening then. You know what I'm saying? Do you know when Eddie came down, I believe it was 1960 or 61 at the latest, that took over Florida with Cowboy Luttrell before he bought Luttrell out. Florida was not a summer territory. It was just for the winter. And it was... Florida was a lot more like Texas at that time. Cowboys, you know what I mean? I don't know if you know this, JP. You know, Florida produces the second most cattle of any state in the Union.
Really?
Yeah. Texas is first, they're second. So, I mean, all the way to probably the mid-80s, you know, that was, then, you know, Florida is a really distinct state. Like, there's Southern Florida, there's Northern Florida, Northern Mid-Florida, like Tampa and Ocala. Well, Ocala is horse country, you know, they raise horses. And then, you know, the Panhandle's Lower Alabama, right? Jacksonville, Tallahassee, really, South Georgia. So can you imagine how redneck it was back then?
Big time, yep.
So if you were running wrestling and you had all these cowboys hanging around, you had to do something to keep them in line. I'm not saying that he was right, but let's go back to 1960. What would you have done?
Right. I mean, it's just a sign of the times. It's nothing bad. It's just... interesting to hear that part, because I didn't know that he was really like, you know, spearheading, basically making sure keep kayfabe, don't let anybody in the business that he doesn't want in the business. I just thought that might have been more like the wrestlers basically putting that together.
I'll give you an example. Johnny Valentine and Red Bastien were working a program, and they were going to be the towns were booked for a month. And they happened to get together and go on their boats and met on this island by, there's a little key where there's a, either Spanish-American War or First World War fort. It's called Egmont Key. You know, you have to go there by boat. They were as far away as you could be, and somebody saw them and mentioned it to Eddie, and Eddie fired them immediately.
Wow.
And they were his friends, too. And he fired them immediately, replaced them. So for him, it was survival. I mean, you're in Tampa. Tampa was a very small city in 1960. Everybody knew where the wrestling office was, right? When you were a kid, did you have any idea there was a wrestling office in New York City?
No. Nope.
Well, Tampa was completely different. It was a small town. So they had a lot of, could have had a lot of problems. And I think Eddie was marking his territory, you know, pissing on his area and letting everybody know. No, it was Eddie Graham's business. Now, did he carry to extreme? And later years, yes.
Was he involved with a lot of the wrong people, too?
You know, I've heard that story 1,000 times. I never saw that side of him being with the wrong people. Could he been? I mean, Florida is one of the most corrupt states in the union. You know, inside trading. I think every. Everybody that sits on any kind of board could go to prison for inside trading, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What is that kind of a joke? So, of course, he would find things out. It was a little town. It was a good boys' club. So, but did I meet people that I questioned? No. But I never was around them on those business meetings, so I don't know.
Did you get along with him really well? Because it seemed like, obviously, you know, you're a part of the inner circle with him for a while. You become one of the bookers, right? I mean, so seemed like you got along with him pretty well.
Yeah, I got along with him very well, I think, because, you know, I was me, Steve Kern, Mike Graham, you know, we're all the same age, and Eddie kind of was nice to me and Steve because we're Mike's friend. So it was a unique situation.
Who got Mike Graham the job in WCW? Would that be you or would that be Dusty?
No, that he was Mike was there before me. And then I came back. I was there first. Then Mike was there when I came back in. And then Eric actually asked a bunch of people to bring Mike back, and we brought Mike back.
Because it seemed like there was a little bit of heat, just judging from that old interview from 2010 with Dusty and Mike Graham, but I guess not, right? I mean, I guess they got over it, right?
I think there was heat. Which one interview was that? I didn't see that.
It was like from 2010. They just played parts of it, and basically he's like, well, Dusty left the territory, and you kind of said the same thing, and, you know, he took half the guys with him, killed Florida, killed his dad. Why did he do that? His dad created him.
Well, I love Dusty. I love Mike. But Mike is a lion. He took everybody. Everybody. I mean, he took himself, Magnum, Barry, Blackjack, Bass, Rotunda.
Black Bart.
Who else? Who else was that? A superstar? It took the whole crew.
And that caused heat with Eddie, Mike, and Dusty?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because Eddie had been on the verge. He was having a tough time. So, you know, that's what happened.
But if you're going to a new territory like that and you want to set JCP on fire, you got to bring your own guys, right? Maybe not that many, but you got to bring your guys.
A guy gives you part of a territory?
So they definitely felt like Dusty maybe stabbed them in the back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it both sides. I'm not going to say anybody was right or anybody's wrong. Dusty thought they didn't. There were some words after a big show that Dusty could produce a big show, but he didn't know how to follow it. And there's a lot of things said. And sometimes, you know, being around someone all the time, you get content. You think you can hear your grievances out. Well, you don't know how people in our business with their egos will accept.
And it's interesting, in 85, he brings you in for 2 months. So is that okayed with Eddie Graham? And, well, really, I guess Eddie's got on at this point, but is that like okayed with Mike Graham that, hey, by the way, I'm going to go work for Dusty for 2 months, but I'm going to come back and, you know, I'm going to start fighting Wahoo McDaniel and everybody else?
I wasn't even really in the territory full time. So I was working in all those places you mentioned to me before. So I was working in San Antonio.
Polynesian Pro.
Polynesian Pro, did you say? St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yeah. So there was a lot of places where I was living in the Bahamas at the time. And so I wasn't working just for Florida. So it wasn't like I was leaving them.
It's interesting, though, like, does Dusty want to keep you for longer? Because I think it's basically June of 85, and then you're gone by August of 85. Did he want to keep you longer, or was this one of the things where, like, nope, I'm headed back to Florida? You know, it's just 2 months, and that's it.
No, I actually went to Continental, and then from Continental, I just got in the book, and then they called me, Florida offered me the book, and I decided to go back to Tampa. And then when Crockett acquired Florida, I kind of merged into that with them.
So basically, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, JCP, part of the NWA here in 85 for these 2 months. You're on a lot of the B shows, if you will. You're wrestling Pez Watley a bunch. Like, for instance, today's topic is Great American Bash 85, which was held on July 6th, 85. You're working that night, but you're in Columbus, Georgia. And obviously, Great American Bash 85 was in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was at the Memorial Stadium, the American Legion Memorial Stadium. 27,000 people in attendance, but you're in a much smaller town working a B card versus Pez Watley on that same night. Did you feel like, man, I want to be a part of a stadium show like that? Obviously more money, but what did you think about that?
I wasn't making the TVs that much. And that was when they took over Georgia. Crockett took over Georgia. So Dusty was sending me to Georgia. And I had a guarantee at the time. So, yeah, would I have liked to have been on the big shows, made more money? Yeah. But I knew what I was going to make there. You know what I mean?
Yep. And it seemed like that show, like the B show, is, you know, like you got the Midnight Express on it, but there's no, and Thunderbolt Patterson, but there's nobody like huge on the show. You know what I mean? Like Italian Stallion's on it, Lightfoot's on it. Like it's nobody huge is on that show. They're all at the Great American Bash. They're all at the big show.
Right, right. And I think that was part of the thing that I wasn't in any territory at the time. You know, I was going back to Florida too. So I can see their way of thinking, why give me that shot if I'm not in the territory?
So obviously here, like I mentioned, 27,000 people, pretty good for the Memorial Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. This is going to be an interesting show as far as like looking back and trying to watch it, because I know they released that Ringmasters tape, but it was basically they clipped some of the matches and it's only an hour long or so. And I know it's just weird. I know eventually they would get better. They would release more full shows when they released the VHS tapes, especially when they became Turner Home Video. Then it became obviously even better. But it's actually kind of hard to find a lot of this show. It's just interesting that you can get some things from WWE, from the old network, or from DVDs. But, like, the original full show is actually hard to get. Very, very strange. I guess that's just because it's 1985. WWF was a little bit ahead of you guys at that point.
I assume, you know, you're right. Did they even – I don't know what was going on. Did they tape the full show? Did they –
So they do, but for some reason, the VHS tape, they just clip it, and it's like a condensed version of the show. So you have to like mix and match almost to watch the whole thing. You got to go to find some on WWE DVDs. It's interesting the way it's like broken up. It kind of stinks in a certain way.
Yeah, it sounds like it stinks, yeah.
Tony Schiavone and Bob Caudill. So all the way back in 85, Schiavone, obviously, he was there before that, but he's back there. And Bob Caudill, your buddy Bob, who we hardly ever talk about on the show. What do you think about Bob Caudill, who's actually, he's still alive?
I think he's wonderful. He must be 95, huh?
I think he's 93 or 94. Maybe you're right. It's up there, though. Maybe it is 95. I know it's up there.
God bless him. He's a great guy.
Great voice.
Yeah.
So for this show, obviously the two big matches are Ric Flair versus Nikita Koloff for the world title, the NWA world title, and Dusty Rhodes versus Tully Blanchard for the TV title in a steel cage. Those are the two big matches. When you look at that, do you think Dusty, obviously leaves from Florida, he's going to main event two Starrcades in a row with Flair. Do you think he's booking himself on top too much? Is that a thought from guys within the business?
I'm sure it was a thought from guys in the business, but they gave him a carte blanche to do anything they wanted, and he was drawing. So, I mean, I wasn't up there that end of the territory much, so I can't tell you much of what was going on. But sure, guys bitch about everything.
For those few months, did you and Dusty have a good relationship there, or didn't really see each other much?
I didn't see him much until he came to, they did the interviews, a lot of interviews in Atlanta, and I'd see him there. We had, yeah, a good relationship.
Did he want to keep you around more and maybe put you part of the booking committee at all?
No, I don't think so. Later on, I came in at the office, but I mean, he was just getting there and settled in. And he was smart like that. He'd bring JJ, him and JJ, they'd settle in and then decide if they needed any more help.
So the first match of the evening, interesting. Well, we'll just talk about a few other matches first. Ron Bass versus Buddy Landell with JJ Dillon ended in a draw. Then the Minnesota Wrecking Crew of Ole Anderson and Arn Anderson defeated Buzz Sawyer and Dick Slater to retain the NWA National Tag Team titles. Then, going to really kind of set it off here with the show, dog collar match between Jimmy Valiant with Buzz Tyler versus Paul Jones with Abdullah the Butcher. What do you think of here as Jimmy Valiant defeats Paul Jones in the dog collar match? What do you think about this feud? Because this is one of those feuds with Jimmy Valiant and Paul Jones. It literally goes on forever, like 4 years. But Jimmy Valiant somehow was always over, and Paul Jones was hated. So what do you think about this dog collar match between these two?
Well, Jimmy was, for some reason, well, because of ability, but he was over in the Carolinas like, just as well as anybody I've ever seen over in a territory. I mean, he did Paul Jones, then he went to Ivan Koloff. I mean, he drew some serious money, yeah.
With that, it's just so interesting, like that, because he's not that great of a worker, right, Valiant? But in that territory where guys were great workers like Midnight Express, Flair, Arn, Tully, he was so over. How can you kind of explain? It was just like he was so charismatic, had cool music. Yeah. He just maintained being over?
He was Mr. Excitement. I mean, the music played. Boy from New York City, he hit that dancing around. Jimmy was a magician. Sleight of hand tricks. I mean, he didn't go in there. They didn't have 20-minute matches. But Jimmy was over everywhere he went. Memphis, he was one of the biggest draws of all times.
When you look at that, too, the Boogie Woogie Man, he's just so charismatic, so popular. But then, like I said, the other side of the coin, not that great of a worker, but that shows you it doesn't matter, right? And you don't need to be, necessarily.
Do you think Hogan was a good worker when he wrestled WWE?
Depends on the opponent, but I think so. I would say yes. But, you know, not up to the par of like a Bret Hart or something like that.
But he had so much charisma, it didn't matter.
Yep.
People that talk about great workers, I want to put an ass in a seat. I don't really care how you get there. But Jimmy Valiant, the question is, why does this happen? It's because he connects with people. It isn't that he just did it there. He did it in Bruce's territory. He did it in Chicago when he started way back in the 60s. Jimmy's been working since the 60s. Memphis, he's one of the biggest guys they've ever had. Him and Lawler, his partners and his opponents. I mean, it goes on and on and on. He's a WWE Hall of Famer, right? The Valley Brothers.
Yep.
Jimmy's been a big name and drawn a lot of money for a long, long time. So I don't think anybody's ever drawn as much money as Jimmy this length of time.
He's been around forever. Yeah, you're right. He has been around a long
mid-60s. The only other one that I can think about mid-60s is Abdullah, right?
Yeah, and he was out there with Paul Jones and Paul Jones' army here for this one. So
Yeah. So,
and with Hogan and stuff, I mean, to me, almost underrated in ring. Like, I always thought he was good in ring anyway, but he didn't need to do much because, you know, he could wag his finger, the crowd goes nuts. You right. know what I mean? He put his cup his ear, crowd goes nuts. He knew when the spots to work and not work. But to me, you're right, putting asses in the seats is paramount.
Right.
So the next matchup, Manny Fernandez, Sam Houston, and Buzz Tyler versus Abdul the Butcher, Superstar Billy Graham, and Conga the Barbarian. So the Barbarian is up there as well. Manny Fernandez, Sam Houston, and Buzz Tyler defeat Superstar Billy Graham, Barbarian, Abdul the Butcher in a six-man tag. Pretty loaded as far as some talent on the heel side, but the baby faces, Fernandez, Houston, and Buzz Tyler end up going over. Interesting.
Yeah.
What did you think about Superstar Billy Graham at this point? Because, you know, it's 1985. It's Great American Bash. It's NWA. It's not WWF. It's not 1997 or 1977. It's not, you know, New York City or Philly and him being the champion. But he's still Superstar Billy Graham, right?
Oh, without a question. He just came from Florida drawing a lot of money.
Did you think, though, that he was like a shell of his former self? What did you think about him in 85?
He looked fabulous. He made a recovery. I mean, he's back in the tie-dye. You know, with the earrings on, he looked great. He got rid of that karate gimmick. He looked great.
What was up with that karate gimmick? That was awful.
I think he did that to sabotage Vince, which was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Such a weird gimmick, and it didn't fit him at all. Didn't look like him. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But here, with Dusty bringing him back in, do you think Dusty had any plans to give him a bigger push? And, you know, basically, kind of the mid card here.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was seeing how superstar's temperature was. If you get my drift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the next matchup, again, like I mentioned before, the Nature Boy, Buddy Landell, with J.J. Dillon versus the Outlaw, Ron Bass. They end in a draw here. I don't know. It's a kind of a shorter match, not really that great. It just seems like, I don't know, they're just throwing it out there to throw it out there. No real big storyline, just a almost like a Southern-style brawl, but too real short to make an impact, and it ends in a draw. So It's not Big Show worthy, if you will. This is like, I don't know, house show stuff or your TV stuff, but Big Show like that, you want some sort of definitive finish, and it wasn't in this match. It ends in a draw.
And I don't know what they were doing on TV with this. Do you?
No, I don't remember.
So I have no idea. So it's kind of hard for me to tell you what I think they're doing.
What did you think of the Outlaw Ron Bass? Like, what did you think about him? Did you think he was almost like a poor man Stan Hansen? I know, obviously, he's not, and he's more than that, but did you almost have that sense of him and how he was booked sometimes?
No, I think there's only one Stan Hansen. You know, I think he was a different character completely. You know, and, you know, Ron had been in Florida. There was another guy that was in Florida. Manny Fernandez was another guy that was in Florida. Buzz, Dickie Slater.
Yep.
You mentioned half that crew.
Yep.
Florida, yeah.
do you like Buddy Landell doing the Nature Boy gimmick while Flair is on top of the card as the world champion? Do you like that?
Obviously, they did. They were going to put the belt on Buddy.
Like, looking back, really? Wow, looking back, it's just interesting. No, they were going to put the NWA title on Buddy Landell?
Yeah.
Wow, how does that go?
Why didn't it happen, or how did it go?
Like, how was it gonna happen, and then how come it didn't happen?
Well, they worked into the program. They were working that program when it didn't happen. They went to TV, and Buddy didn't show up. Dusty called them, and he said, Buddy, get your ass down to TV. Buddy been up all night, and hung up on him, and that was it. They fired him. But he's going to become the NWA World Champion.
Wow, who is he going to be? He was going to be Flair?
Ric Flair.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
Did Buddy know that? Story.
Yes, that's a well-known story. Everybody knew it. That was in the territory.
Man, it just didn't seem like, to me, I mean, he's awesome, an awesome worker, but it just didn't seem like world champion to me.
Well, they thought they could draw a lot of money with it.
Nature Boy versus Nature Boy?
Yeah.
What was Buddy's excuse for, like, blowing it off? He's just too drunk? He just, and whatever?
I wasn't there, but from everything I gathered, he just didn't want to go to TV.
Oh, my God, unbelievable. And he was told he was going to win the title, and he still wouldn't show up?
Yeah.
Wow, what a big mistake on his part. Jeez, please.
Yeah.
Because to me, I was always like, two Nature Boys, and like kind of doing the same gimmick. And then they kind of had Terry Taylor eventually kind of come in and doing, you know, similar gimmick. I just hate that, for the same territory doing the same gimmick.
Terry was doing the Nature Boy gimmick?
Similar, very similar. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
The look was very similar for a while.
Okay.
When you look at Buddy Landell, is he like one of the guys where you would say, like, wow, that might be like the biggest miss just as far as like potential and where he could have been?
There's been a lot of them, but I knew Buddy when he first started. He had some demons that cost him a lot of money.
For sure, man. Oof, big time. So then we have the, like I mentioned before, the NWA National Tag Team Champions. It's Ole Anderson, Arn Anderson defending the titles. They are, of course, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. They beat Buzz Sawyer and Dick Slater to retain the tag team titles. What do you think of that team, Dick Slater and Buzz Sawyer?
Very good working tag team, that's for sure. Great.
Did you have any sort of relationship with Buzz?
Oh, yeah. Buzz and I were friends. We're partners on and off.
What did you think about him, like, attitude wise? You know, there's a lot of stories about him. I mean, just crazy stories about him ripping guys off and things like that. What do you think about him as a person?
Well, I never had any problems with Buzz. I actually, we were tag team partners for a while, but the only time I would see Buzz was in the arena. I didn't ride with them, I didn't hang with them, but I've heard the same stories, and hearing them from people that I believe, pretty tough. I just saw the thing about a Magnum thing. I didn't know about that.
That is crazy, because if you think about it, like, okay, you rip some guys off, you probably never hear from them again. They have no talent. He did that to Magnum TA, who obviously was a huge star, destined to become the NWA World Champion before the accident. But, like, wow. And I love that Magnum showed up at his door and, like, kind of, you know, made him train him a little bit, but, you know, and got him a job in Oregon. But it's one of the things where it's like, wow, you don't expect that to happen, I bet. You steal, you know, $10,000 from the guy, and the guy shows up, knocks on your door.
Yeah. So,
but did anybody, like, any of the guys, the guys in the back say, like, Buzz, what the hell are you doing? You're screwing guys over? They didn't give two shits. Like, they just looked the other way.
I think they looked the other way. But a lot of guys, now, how would the guys know about the Magnum thing that was done on the side, right?
Yep.
Even Magnum said it. So Buzz must have done that. If he's done it more than once, he did it very quietly.
And if you look at it, he did it to another guy even bigger than Magnum TA. He did it to The Undertaker. Screwed him, took $3,000 and bolted out of town.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? I mean,
yeah.
Like, that can you come back to bite you, right? I mean, these guys could come back and want to kill you. Just you steal that much money from them.
Yeah, yeah.
So Dickie Slater obviously has a reputation being one of the toughest guys of all time. Is that just? Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Give me a story about him beating somebody up.
Ron Michalowicz. Not Ron Michalowicz. John Matuszak. Beat him up. It was so bad the guy wouldn't come out of the hotel room and sent apologies to Dickie through notes through the door.
Wow.
Yeah, he beat up a lot of people, Dickie, in that area in Tampa. He was well known.
And I know there's an infamous Sting story in WCW. I guess he was with Dark Journey at the time. Sting didn't know it and he slept with her. So Sting, they were basically saying to Sting, like, just be honest with him, you know, have him, you know, beat you up or have him do whatever, you know, or get in a fight with him, but be honest with him. So I guess Sting told him and Dick Slater beat up Sting, a very young Sting.
That was in WCW?
NWA, yeah, 87-ish. Yeah.
Okay.
Very interesting. Yeah, so obviously a tough guy for sure. Yeah. But there's also like funny stories of like him just loving, obviously, I mean, you can tell by his style, but him just loving Terry Funk so much.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that was his idol.
Yeah.
I did hear a funny story that Funk once locked him in the trunk of his car as a prank.
Really?
A young Dickie Slater. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I wouldn't want him on my bad side, though, from all the stories that I've heard. Oh, my God.
No.
He
was well known throughout that whole area. Tough.
How come you're not beating anybody up and getting any fights? What's going on here?
Try to use my brain.
Stay on the other side. Yes.
Yeah.
Would you say Dick Slater up there with like Haku level or not quite? Like as far as tough guys in the business?
Nobody's up there, the Haku, but he's right behind. You know, Haku's on a different planet, and then Dickie is right up there with the toughest of them all.
You know, when I interviewed Haku years ago, you know who he said was tougher than him?
Who?
Barbarian.
They put each other over, I think.
That's what, and it's funny, I just talked to Barbarian, I think it was last month, and I was joking around with him. I go, Haku said you're tougher. He said, nope. He goes, he's just being humble. He goes, he's definitely tougher. Yeah. And Haku mentioned, he said the Steiner brothers, too, he said were tougher than him. And no. Barbarian said no.
No, no way. No way.
They're up there, though. They're up there, though. Yeah. Not, I mean, not his level, but they're up there. So next up, NWA World Tag Team title match. Crusher, Khrushchev, and Ivan Koloff, the tag team champions, versus the Road Warriors with Paul Ellering. It ends in a double disqualification. Of course, the Russians retain their NWA World Tag Team Championship. What do you think about Crusher Khrushchev in the Russians team? Obviously, Barry Darso.
I like them. I think Barry's a great worker.
When you look at the gimmick, do you like him as the Russian gimmick? I mean, obviously he pulled it off, but do you like that gimmick for him?
Well, he pulled it off, so I gotta like it. And they were using that to bolster Nikita up too.
Bolster what?
Nikita up.
Oh, okay. Because obviously you had the three of them, Ivan, Nikita, and Crusher Khrushchev, and obviously the Russians at that point, you know, with the Cold War, over like Rover as heels. I mean, they were absolutely hated.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting note here. Going into this match, it's NWA titles are on the line, but the Road Warriors are actually the AWA Tag Team Champions. Was there a, I know there was Pro Wrestling America, and there was like a good relationship because you guys would sometimes do joint shows, but how was the relationship really with AWA and NWA at this point in 85?
Good.
Basically, they both had a common enemy, right, Vince?
Yeah. The war was, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
And what do you think about Uncle Ivan at this point? Obviously, you know, he's towards the tail end of his career, but he's really helping getting these young guys over that are kind of, you know, the future.
Big time. And I don't know why he's not in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Didn't he get in, him and Vince Jr. didn't get along, and then he tried to sue them? Wasn't that the whole thing?
I don't know.
I thought he was a part of that lawsuit against Vince, which seemed like Vince holds it against him, because Crusher Khrushchev was also in the lawsuit against Vince, obviously, as Smash, and their Demolition isn't in the Hall of Fame either, Billy Eadie and him.
So that must be the reason, yeah.
Pretty crazy if you think about it. Demolition, they held the tag titles for like 440 days, one of the greatest tag teams, not in. I mean, they should have been in 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So the double DQ obviously keeps both teams strong and keeps the tag titles on the Russian team, while the Road Warriors, the AWA tag team champions, they probably didn't want Road Warriors to be double tag champs, right?
I would think so. I mean, I didn't know the politics that well, what was going on. That would be between Crockett and Dusty and Vern and Greg, I guess.
You like that booking of having the Russian team during the Cold War for like easy heat? Do you like that?
Yeah, they got over. They were drawing money.
At what point do you think that might be like some cheap heat? Because I know, like, obviously Nikolai Volkov would always do the Russian national anthem. People like, oh, such cheap heat. Like, is it really though, or is it good? Or is it good old fashioned pro wrestling?
Well, it seems to be comes back, right? Don't you think you could do that gimmick today?
Big time.
Yep. Ukrainian flag? I mean, so yep. It works.
Or a big Putin supporter? Yeah, you get huge heat. Yep.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, WWE teased that with Rusev for a little bit, and then it got too much backlash, so they stopped doing it. But he was like saying, like, my leader, Putin, and all this other stuff, and, you know, getting booted out of the building.
Yeah.
So the next matchup, Magnum TA defending his NWA United States Championship. He defeats Kamala with Skandar Akbar by DQ in about 7 minutes here to retain his NWA United States Championship. Interesting. Kamala making his presence felt here in the NWA in 1985. And obviously, Magnum U.S. Champion. I mean, he was on his way to the world title.
Yep. Yeah.
Here as U.S. champ in 85, he's going to be Kamala here. He's going to start a feud with Tully, and that's kind of going to be his direction. Did you think here in 85, like, he's definitely going to be world champion? Like, there's no doubt about it, or were you not really on board as of yet?
Well, I thought he was good, but, I mean, I hadn't seen him work in that kind of situation very much, so I knew he was could grow into it, but I didn't see him enough to say, oh, yeah, he's the guy. You know what I mean?
Because if you look at it, like, he has a great look. They're slowly but surely building him up. Like, everything was kind of going in that direction for him, like the slow build to the world title. And he definitely had the charisma. He had the look. He was pretty good in ring. He had a little bit of an edge to him, which I like. When you look at that, it's like, would that be a good NWA champion, though? I mean, he seems like a different type of breed, or was that almost a counteract Hogan a little bit?
I'm not sure if they were thinking that far out to counteract Hogan.
Because if you look at just, I don't know, like NWA champions in general, like guys like Flair, like the Stalwarts, he was definitely like a new breed or a different breed.
Well, you know, it was like 1985, the glitz and the glamour, the motorcycles, the leather jackets, he fitted in the time. It's hard for us to look back,
right?
You know, and put our mores and thought processes back what shit was going on then.
I think he would have been an awesome NWA champion, and a feud with Flair, I think, would have been great.
Yeah, I did too.
I love that story that he was saying with Dusty about how he was in Mid-South and he was trying all these gimmicks. And, you know, he's doing the thing with Mr. Wrestling 2, and then he's doing this gimmick, he's doing that, and, like, nothing was working. He didn't like it. So Dusty didn't even tell him that he was giving him a gimmick. He just goes, you know what, buy a Harley Davidson, wear your leather jacket, and just go to the show and just, you know, just don't quit yet. So he does that, and he shows up, and as soon as Watts saw him with the leather jacket and the motorcycle, he's like, wow, you look awesome. Like, is this the new gimmick? And Magnum didn't even realize it was his new gimmick. And the crowd, I mean, the people that saw him outside, everybody kind of was like, wow, that's just like, what an awesome look for this guy. It was like, perfect. He like encapsulated that time period perfect. And Dusty was right. I mean, he nailed it.
Yeah, yeah.
Smart guy, smart dude.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can't, you know, question that. You can't, if you didn't live back then, it's hard to think what it was like. It was way out of whack. The '80s.
With Magnum, do you think he had the charisma to bring the NWA back, or was the WWF too far ahead that it didn't? Because everyone says the crash killed the NWA, but do you think he could have brought them back, or was the WWF too far ahead?
The crash didn't kill the NWA. WWE killed the NWA.
Could they have, say he wins the title, could they have done any sort of dent to Hogan or
nothing,
no?
Nothing. They could have done nothing.
Wow.
Nothing.
Would just been another good feud for Flair and Magnum, you know, just been a good feud.
Here's the problem. Vince had Jim Barnett. Jim Barnett knew every TV manager, every program manager. These guys were in Charlotte, North Carolina in the 80s. Vince is in Connecticut, New York in the 80s. They tried to do shit with some of the promoters, Watts and Jarrett and Crockett's, right?
Yep.
They couldn't even decide what to order for lunch. They couldn't have stopped it. Couldn't have stopped it.
I believe it. I could see that.
Yeah.
So next up is not the main event, but it is for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. David Crockett is the special guest referee. It's Ric Flair defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Nikita Koloff with Ivan Koloff. Very interesting. Not the main event of the evening, but between these two. Heel versus heel. Basically, this was like, oh, the Kremlin says Nikita wants, or they want Nikita to win the world title and bring the NWA title back to Russia. So that it's a heel versus heel, which is pretty rare for this time period. Pretty good match for the most part. Of course, Ric Flair ends up winning and defeating Nikita and retaining his title. A decent match. I feel like the Starrcade match, which happens a year later when Nikita's a babyface, is a better match. But it's interesting kind of thing to do heel versus heel, right? And have Flair go over Nikita.
Yeah, but I think that there was other territories that were dealing. Maybe not then because of Hogan. But before that, WWE would have heel versus heel.
Once in a while.
Yeah, they had a huge program with Kowalski and Steel.
Oh, okay.
And then they had a huge program with Kowalski and Stasiak.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Yeah. Stan the Man. Yep.
Yeah.
So here, it's interesting, like his Flair is kind of almost the baby face, which is crazy to think of here in 85, but the Russians, after Flair wins, after the match, they actually end up beating Flair and actually almost causing a riot. So the crowd was, you know, kind of turned. I know it's Charlotte is Flair country. He's kind of always over a little bit anyway, but that really kind of helped solidify. And then earlier when he came out, he actually came out in a helicopter, which was very like babyface entrance-like. You know what I mean? Like put a lot of thought into Flair for this night.
Right.
You think there was any thought of turning him for real babyface, or was this just a trick so they can get Dusty? Basically, I mean, trick Dusty.
Truthfully, I'm not qualified to tell you yes or no because I wasn't there. But I think it was just that night because were they going to turn Rick babyface with Dusty there and Magnum in the waiting?
No, I don't think so. Because basically it's all a trick and they get Dusty in the cage and they break his leg and they break his arm. You know, basically it's a trick on Dusty, which always is with Flair. He tricks everybody and turns heel. But it's just interesting for a little bit of time there, the Russians were the heels and they were feuding with Flair because no one's going to root for the Russians, even though Nikita looks like $1 million.
Right, right.
Green as hell, though, at this point. I mean, to be getting a top-tier match in 85 and to get the run he had, he was super green, but he had the look, he had the appeal, and his charisma was off the charts.
And he had Uncle Ivan.
Yes.
To do all the work for him, yeah.
Yep. Did you think he's a future world champion, just looking at him?
No.
Why not?
Work wasn't that good.
You think Magnum was better?
Without question, yeah.
They did have a great best of seven series for the U.S. title. Obviously, it would be after this. But
what's the longest they went?
Yeah, it's true. If you look at the times, I think it was like 13. I remember I was trying to look the other day at some of the matches after I watched Dark Side. Short, and I have an old DVD I've watched. I've seen all the matches, but they weren't that long. 10, 13 minutes maybe. I don't remember the matches going that long.
Because Nikita couldn't do it. So how do you
maybe that's smart.
How do you become NWA world champion?
True, you got to be a good worker, right? You got to be able to carry that belt and wrestle everywhere and wrestle anybody.
You got to be able to go 60 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
He definitely would have been that new breed, that ultimate warrior type, where it was a lot more about the look and the charisma and the appeal.
And that didn't draw.
No, right? not compared to Hogan, no. Or Macho Man, even the year before, yeah. No.
Right. No.
So the main event is up next. It's an NWA TV title match. Interesting that the TV title goes on the main event last, but obviously you know that means Dusty's in the match. But there's kind of a reason for it because they had a set up the steel cage. I kind of see that, but sometimes shows will have the steel cage first, so they set it up, and then they can take it down and have the rest of the card, and then the world championship would be in the main event if it wasn't a steel cage match. But it's a non-sanctioned lights-out cage match for the NWA TV title. So that was kind of the excuse of having it be on last. They're setting up the cage where they're saying it's non-sanctioned, so it's got to be after the show, quote-unquote. Do you like that, though? It's Dusty Rhodes versus Tully Blanchard's four Baby Doll services on the line. Obviously, Tully is with Baby Doll here. Do you like that going on last? Do you think Flair had a problem with Dusty going on last?
I'm sure Flair had a problem with Dusty going on last. But if it's non-sanctioned, I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to separate it from the rest of the show. But, you know, whether it mattered, it really didn't matter. I mean, where you put it to me didn't matter. But to me, if you're really doing this non-sanctioned thing, if ever you do it again, you can never do it anywhere but after the matches.
Would you think this is Dusty Ego being the main event at all? Would that come into play?
It might have, but I sometimes doubt it. I think that they really wanted to make this match mean something. You know, where, hey, Flair went on before this, and I guess there's some rules. That was my thinking. Not knowing what the temperature was back then, it's kind of hard to know.
So, like, lights out unsanctioned is kind of the way around it, but, behind the scenes, I could see Flair saying, like, what the hell's going on here? Like, even talking to J.J. Dillon many years ago, I used to do a bunch of shows with him. I would say he's like, Flair would always say to him, like, come on, like, I'm the man around here. Why is he always kind of interjecting himself in the main event? So there was definitely a lot of professional rivalry between Dusty and Flair at that point.
I'm sure there was. There was day one.
So if you look at Dusty versus Tully Blanchard, they did exchange a TV title a little bit back and forth. They did have a great feud. If you actually look at it, Tully Blanchard beat Dusty more than anybody. More than you and more than Flair, if you look at the career. Why do you think that Dusty and Tully maybe had a good relationship? Or why do you think that, and I know Tully was awesome and over as a heel, but how come he gets to beat Dusty so much while so many other people perhaps not?
I just think that Dusty was comfortable with Tully. He was comfortable, you know, as Joe Blanchard had helped Dusty when he first started. So there was a lot of things. But Tully was a good worker, too.
I just was maybe somewhat surprised. This is years ago, looking at all the matches. I was like, wow, Tully actually had a really good record against Dusty compared to everybody else. You know, there's so many job guys, you know, or guys that would job to Dusty and stuff. But, man, Tully beat him a lot. Obviously not here, though, because Dusty Rhodes defeats Tully Blanchard to win the NWA World Television title. 11 minutes, 30 seconds. So now Dusty Rhodes, after he wins with the Powell Driver, pretty good match for the most part here. He gets the services of Baby Doll, so that's going to infuriate Tully as well. What do you think here? Dusty going over?
I mean, I don't know really what the angle has been, you know, because I had been in the territory, but obviously they drew a lot of money coming out of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they must have done the right thing.
If you look at the TV title, main eventing over the world title, I don't know if that, to me, screams main event.
It doesn't scream main event, but if it's a non-sanctioned, where do you put it?
True. Either first or last, but you're probably last because it's Dusty. Yep.
Yeah.
So overall, this show, yeah, it's an okay show. It's kind of hard to find the whole show if you're really looking for it. What do you think just overall as we're kind of going through the show? And I know obviously you were in Columbus, Georgia this night on the B side of things, but what do you think overall the show?
Not knowing what's really happening in the territory, I'm going to have to give a slight thumbs up, not knowing what's going on. But it seemed to me they had some good stuff, but I'm not sure where they were going.
It is interesting that it's like Flair and Nikita, so you're kind of turning Flair a little bit face here, but obviously he's the NWA champion. Dusty's main eventing as the TV champion and feuding with Tully, which the feuds are going to continue even though the babyface won the cage match because now he has the services of Baby Doll, and obviously Tully's not going to be happy, so they're going in that direction. They kept the Road Warriors and the Russians both strong in the tag team division. The Minnesota Wrecking Crew of Arn and Ole are slowly but surely going to be joining the ranks of the Nature Boy and soon going to be forming the Four Horsemen. So and then of course Magnum's going to start a big feud with Tully Blanchard as well, and Dusty's going to go back into feuding with Ric Flair. A lot of stars though. That's the one thing I noticed here. But I know WWF was loaded, but man, NWA was loaded in this time period as well.
Yeah, they sure were.
Especially with the Midnight Express and Kevin Sullivan working B shows. I mean, that's pretty loaded.
Yeah. Well, this is when they were trying to build up Georgia too. So I'm not really sure what was going on there. So I'm sorry I was kind of vague about that.
Yeah, no problem. So let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check the website, tmptempire.com. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else you got going on this crazy
Well, I'm going to be down next weekend at Conrad's for his convention. So I'm looking forward to meeting some people. So come by and say hello.
All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPT Empire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.
If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is pro wrestler approved.